Welcome, everybody. This is SharePoint Weekly, episode 51. It is 9th of September, and I was putting on a Twitter earlier today that it actually felt like a first day in autumn in Helsinki. So today we have a visitor directly live from Redmond. You are calling in from building
34. Yes.
That's actually my office building, so I just work remotely.
You should know the number.
Yes. Every time he's like, campus, where am I supposed to go?
But I mean, we relocate around the building a lot, but
true.
Not different buildings.
That is true. And it's always like, how did you come up with this setup? Well, I don't know.
We just know what they tell us to.
Exactly. But now, Kathy, do you do your own intro? So it's easier that way. Who are you? Where did you come from? How long have you been in Microsoft?
Well, she's in building 34 on a campus.
That's true.
We established that already.
We just went through that. But no. So I'm Kathy Du. I am a program manager on the SharePoint extensibility team here at Microsoft. I have a long and interesting history with SharePoint. Started my career actually as a graphic designer. I actually have an art degree, not a computer science degree or anything crazy like that. So I started my career in advertising and then moved over into branding and customizing SharePoint sites about 12 years ago. I was a SharePoint MVP for 6 years before I joined Microsoft. I joined Microsoft about 3 years ago, it'll be 3 years in December. And for the first year and a half of my career at Microsoft, I was the product marketing manager for PowerUps and Flow. And then I was really missing SharePoint. So I came back home to the SharePoint team. And so now I'm on the developer extensibility team here in the SharePoint world. I own Store. So all of the SharePoint Store components are things that I've been working on. And hopefully in the next year, you guys will start to see some of that start to come to fruition. It's been a little while. And then I also recently took over as the program manager responsible for all of SharePoint branding features. So kind of full circle, came back around.
Yeah. Nice.
So then the immediate follow-up question is, so Kathy, now that you own the branding capabilities, are we going to have a master pages back?
Oh, no.
Sorry.
Well, from the functional point of view, maybe kind of no.
I mean, we're working on lots of great capabilities that are going to kind of really work and give people more expanded capabilities. We're really trying to complete the vision is really what I'm working on right now is developing what that plan looks like and how do we complete the vision and give people really what they need, both from an out-of-the-box perspective and from an extensibility perspective. So we're looking at it from both methods. How do we give you the ability to do what you want as far as we can make it possible and accessible and all of those fun things in the product? And then how can we provide developers the ability to extend it even further?
I guess it's also an interesting time, right? Because the first few years when I worked with SharePoint 2007, I built internet-facing site. And the one thing you don't want your internet-facing site to look like is SharePoint team site. Yeah. So you would customize, you would build custom master pages and all that. But I know the amount of work it took to do it. And a public-facing site is a really tailored experience. Like, you don't need it to do everything. It just need to do the things that it was meant to do. Now, people often ask for exactly the same ability to do nowadays in a cloud, but then first of all, you release new versions every week as opposed to every three years.
Yep.
Whatever people change need to accommodate for what they need, but also for everything new you build that you haven't thought of in the past, right? So it's just really, I think it's a really interesting thing to like, how do you strike the balance between giving people the freedom they ask for, but also giving them what they don't ask for, but what they kind of expect that things will just work and they will get the latest updates.
Yeah. I mean, we've really been taking a lot of strides over the last few years in SharePoint, and especially when it comes to branding and making sure that SharePoint is accessible, making sure that the color schemes and the themes and the way that they're applied work for anyone that can, if you have vision impairment, if you have heart, if you can't see that small white text, you know, making sure that all of that is there and really kind of making those experiences better for all of our users. And that was something in SharePoint 2007 that was such a far stretch that we used to spend hours upon hours trying to tweak that. And now we've spent so much time just trying to make the out-of-the-box features accessible and making sure that as we allow people to customize it, that we don't lose that accessibility and those different components of it, that it still gives you the option to brand it and make it your own.
Now, coming back on what Waldeck was saying, and I know that everybody in this room basically agrees on this, but really kind of reiterating the problem with the custom master pages was that when you introduced the custom master page, you were not actually getting any updates anymore. So
It depended, right? It wasn't black and white.
Exactly. Yeah. You never knew. So what happened with some of our large customers who were in the cloud or in a classic publishing scenarios in SharePoint Online, they basically, a lot of their customers or employees were like, hey, I saw this cool capability in SharePoint Online. We are in SharePoint Online. I saw this video. Why isn't it there? And then when you investigate, and it's like, well, it's because you use a custom master page and it doesn't automatically get new stuff deployed. Which kind of reiterates why the custom master pages are bad, and they're not bad, but they were different.
They come with their own set of caveats.
Exactly.
And they are not encouraged.
Yes.
Not encouraged.
Yes, there are absolutely better way to achieve desirable results.
Plus the fact that with custom communication sites, there's no such thing as custom master pages or master pages in general. It doesn't exist. It just doesn't. But now, Kathy, related on that one, because I want to put you on the spot on that one. So we're still getting a lot of feedback on, hey, but I want to do X and Y and Z, and I want to do all of these things. Is Microsoft going to do more branding capabilities? Can I do funky sites? Or will there be anything what I want? Or will it be somehow what's restricted? What's your thinking and vision around that?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely going to continue to deliver new branding features. And it just right now, I'm really listening to what people are asking for, seeing what things have been talked about in the past that maybe haven't been delivered on, and really focusing on kind of, like I said, completing that vision. So there's a lot of things that we've talked about, that we've shown slides of, that we've shown in demonstrations that haven't been delivered yet. And I really want to come in and deliver on some of those and then continue to figure out what are the things that people really want and need, and then how do we put those into the product. So that's really where I'm kind of focused on right now is completing the things that we've already showcased and then figuring out what are the other blockers and the things that people want to do. And I mean, I came into this and in May is kind of when I took this role on to do branding again. And I went into it and tried to build a custom comm site and have it do what I used to do using custom master pages and created a list of my own of what I thought was missing and have been working to gather that from other people, from our customers, and figure out how do we go about putting those things in place and what makes sense and what doesn't.
Absolutely. Now, coming back on what you said earlier on, it's also the fact that in out-of-the-box SharePoint also, we want to make sure that SharePoint is accessible for anybody. And that really comes down on the diversity and inclusiveness and inclusive behavior, which we definitely are working towards those capabilities in the product as a company as well. But you've been really promoting, you've been kind of a leading conference tracks and all of that stuff in these areas. Can you talk about slightly on that?
It's something that's really near and dear to my heart. Coming into the SharePoint world 12 years ago was really surprised at kind of how few women were in it at the time, how few women were speaking and kind of being public. And even as MVPs, it was a very small number when I came into it 12 years ago. And so a group of females and I got together and we actually formed 10 years ago a group called Women in SharePoint. And so over the years, we've really worked to bring more women into it, to give them safe spaces to come in and promote. And we've seen the numbers of women included in the SharePoint community grow astronomically. Yeah. The number of women at SharePoint conferences is almost equal to men now, which is great. And we really, truly love seeing that. And then over the years, it's kind of branched out even further to be more diversity and inclusion, that we should make sure that everyone feels included, that everyone has a safe space. So while we're still branded as women in SharePoint, we truly have a more diversity and inclusion focus and mentality these days. In fact, we work heavily with the SharePoint conference that happens in May every year. I'm one of the track leads on the diversity and inclusion track there. And like you said, just trying to make sure that diversity and inclusion is at the front of everyone's mind as you go about and creating it, and how can we better support our community and make everyone feel like they have a place and that they have a right to be there. And that's something that is that a lot of people still question.
Yeah, which well, obviously there are regional areas as well. I'm from Scandinavia, so there's a clear difference between certain area countries in the world, but obviously everybody should be treated equal regardless of their whatever capabilities, outside or internal capabilities what people have. So, which is interesting. But I have to say this because I warned Kathy and Waldeck around this story, because this still bothers me a lot. So when I started, as an example, I'm from Scandinavia, and sure, it's a slightly different world, but when I started creating my videos, first time back in, when was it, like 2010, we started creating guidance videos for add-in transformation, so farm solutions to add-ins, so that people are able to go to the cloud. One well-known MVP publicly attacked on me on those videos due to my accent. And that was actually, that's terrifying. I wouldn't say terrifying, but it's like, why?
It's so demoralizing.
Why are we, exactly. Why does it matter? As long as the message comes true, and sure, yes, people have accents and people are different and all of that, but why can't we work together as the community and allow everybody to do whatever they are?
Well, but I mean, it's like with everything else, like there are folks who choose to spend their energy like that, and there are others who choose to spend their energy on making things better. Improving things, you know, and creating, as you said, safe space for everybody where we can talk and we can participate on merit as opposed to either gender or preference or religion.
it's a really kind of sad state of affairs that we live in a world where people feel so comfortable behind their computers to say and do anything that they want in regards to another human. And it is really hard. I will say, Vesa, I kind of had a similar situation when I started speaking. I came to Europe to speak, and I'm from Alabama in the United States. And yes, the accent you hear on me is not a deep Alabama accent, but it used to be. Yeah. And I actually got a lot of negative feedback about my accent. And I lived in Alabama until 3 years ago. And I actually went and hired an elocution coach to help me get rid of a lot of my accent. So that's why I don't have that deep Southern drawl anymore. But
Which
that was something
pity.
That I chose to do, but it's awful, right? But I get home and I go back to Alabama and it comes back in a heartbeat.
And everyone's like, what?
Stop
and
wanting to do it.
We need to do another one when you're actually visiting home.
Yes.
It also comes out if I've had a few drinks out with people socially. But it's just sad. People feel so comfortable doing that. And we see that in our diversity and inclusion work. We see people that say, I'm too scared to stand on stage. And so we're really happy that we're able to match people up and do mentoring and do the smallest things, like helping people tweak their resume to make it better, to find a job that takes them out of a bad situation.
Yeah.
So many different things that I've had the pleasure of doing over the years, like you said, Waldeck, to try to make the world a better place instead of just kind of sitting by and letting it happen. But it is sad that we're in that world where people feel so comfortable to kind of cyberbully and to really say negative things. And I see it all the time, even happening in our wonderful SharePoint community.
Well, luckily, I would say less and less luckily, because clearly I think if you think about the community nowadays, at least what I'm seeing, and sure, it's a bubble which I live in, because that's how the social media works. It gives you the bubble where you're living in. But it's clear that people are much more supportive and the whole, I would say even the open source way of thinking helps people on thinking through the way that I'm going to help somebody else to succeed. And it's not away from me. It's not that I'm losing the opportunity, because why not help the others? They will help me, and then we'll be wiser together. And that's really, really what I want to actually help to make happen as well. So
yeah, part of what does make the SharePoint community so great is that most everyone in the community takes that kind of idea and that mantra to heart, is not just how do I make myself better, but how do I make it better for others, and how do I encourage others and really truly do that. And so it's just great that we have that kind of community behind us to support it, and that we have things like Women in SharePoint to help the people that maybe feel like they don't have a place to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I think that actually sums up. That's a great summary on the things. We do have a hard stop as well. So, and that's mainly because of me, because Kathy's manager is my manager, and I have a one-to-one with Ed right now as well. So I need to actually flip away from the call. But thank you, Kathy. Great discussion.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
It would have been love to be able to actually talk even more.
But sorry, we'll do another one. Late. It's my fault. It's so short.
No. We'll do another one, and definitely at some point to come update on the branding capabilities and continue discussion on the community and diversity topics. Definitely. Thank you, Waldeck, for joining up on this one as well.
Anytime.
And then in this podcast plus the YouTube video, now that we started the podcast as well, we're going to now flip to the articles, which we recorded earlier today. So we will see a transition. Kathy won't be covering
a commercial break.
Yes, commercial break. But thank you, Kathy. Thank you. Thank you. And we'll be definitely in touch. So let's actually get to the articles this week. So this week there is a ship on Saturday, Barcelona. That's one of my favorite locations to visit, definitely. I've been there way too often. And one of the good things actually about Barcelona is that you can't get lost in that city. I just love that. Because the road, you cannot, because the roads are always leading to the sea. So then you can spot yourself in the matrix of the city.
Fair enough. Well, I mean, the coast is pretty long, so I mean, you could arrive at
Sure. Theoretically, yes, but it's really hard to get lost in Barcelona comparing to Rome or whatever other more complex it is. But ship on Saturday in Barcelona. So we have here, scrolling down, a lot of familiar faces, a lot of familiar speakers, some Spanish balancing on there, clearly, which is good as well. Some local people, and then some people who are in all of the conferences, like Addis or Paula or Yusis there as well. Cool.
Yeah, and I guess it is cool, right? Because not everybody has a chance to travel. So if you can't, you still get a chance to see people whom you otherwise might follow on social or whatever.
Yep.
You get to see them in real life and maybe engage with them. So that is cool.
Absolutely. That's really good. And plus the fact that then there's a language balance as well in certain areas. It's super important to have the local and deliveries in the local languages as well. So not only in English. So which makes perfect sense. Now, this is upcoming Saturday, 14th. Was it 14th? I think it was 14th.
Yes. And there's also another one. And there's also another event as well.
Really? Yes, there is. There's Saturday Stockholm. And so they're competing between each other. Let's have a look on the speaker list. So some familiar faces, definitely. And some local, definitely some local blood as well. So this is good balance. And Darcy is flying over, apparently. Fabio is over there. Gogan. Yeah, a lot of familiar faces, a lot of good presenters. Definitely interesting looking set of speakers and sessions. So it's actually kind of bitty when you think of it, that there's always two competing SharePoint Saturdays on the same weekend, and then there might be a weekend where there's nothing.
But I mean, it's not like everybody will travel to, like, you have to pick one or you
not.
Will pick.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So it's like you either don't care about any place in the world and you go because you like the location, or you happen to live around and you will go either to that one. So I guess that at the end of the day, it's not really a hard choice like which one to pick. I mean, it would be weird if you had one in, I don't know, Malmo and Denmark, right? I mean, which are really close together. Yeah, exactly. Like, okay, so do I go like across this side of bridge or this side of bridge? Yeah, but other than that, I mean, it's like this,
Yeah, Stockholm is again on a World Trade Center. I've been actually here a few times at least. So good location as well.
Absolutely. And I think, I think the only time that I was there was exactly the same place, on Valentine's Day, I remember that.
Was it? Okay.
Yes, there was a Valentine's Day.
Okay. Wow. Good memory. And we have Shape on Saturday Helsinki coming up pretty soon as well. So I've been forced to decline on this Shape on Saturdays now. I'm way too busy on other stuff as well. But for Shape on Saturday Helsinki, I promised to drop by. That's on 28th of this month. There's still Adelaide and Pittsburgh before that. Now, Helsinki and Los Angeles are competing.
Which one will you pick? And then Richmond also.
Oh, Richmond as well. That's true.
Tough choice, right?
Yeah, indeed. Cool. Let's actually have a look on the other article. So this one is from this completely unknown guy called Waldeck, right?
No idea.
No idea who he is. Is he an imposter or is it actually?
Yeah.
Anyway, so basically, it's good to have a refresh on how to get started, because I think a lot of our existing getting started, let's say documentation, everything else is actually more than 2 years old, because Shape on Saturday is now 2.5 years old from GA perspective. So having a refresh on the material definitely makes a lot of sense. So you're linking all of the tutorials and documentation and all of that.
This isn't anything new. It's just pointers to, there's, I think that from the SPDEF point of view, we have never had so many resources available as we have now. And maybe to some, even to the point where, there is so much. Where do I start?
Yep, absolutely. Which of these is the most important thing? And also, one of the challenges with SharePoint, I'm a consultant. One of the challenges about the situation, I'm an ex-recovering consultant, I'm still recovering. Anyway, one of the downsides of SharePoint, challenges around SharePoint is the fact that SharePoint has existed for such a long time. And when you go to and do a Google search or Bing search around SharePoint and create a column using code, you get a spectrum of different responses from 15 years ago or whatever. And then you're like, which of this is the relevant stuff anymore. So that's why it's good to have a refresh.
In the end, right, it still depends, because different companies are in the different time and place with their deployments.
That's true.
Some might be on be in a cloud, but some might be still on premise. Like, we have a lot of customers who are still on 2013, or just today I talked to a customer who is moving off 2010 going to the cloud. So for them, the reality is still like the thing that we think about as a past is not the past for them. For them, that's reality.
Absolutely.
So they still need relevant stuff to their reality.
Guidance and if there's new people who need to ramp up the maintenance side of that 2010 or 2013 environment and farm solutions, that information has to exist. Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. But obviously, the future is on a SharePoint framework. Or SharePoint framework based thingies. Okay, next. Related on SharePoint framework, this one was really good from last Wednesday from AC. There was numerous people noting this internally in Microsoft as well. It's like, we work with AC on a day-to-day basis, so there's nothing really new in here. But it's good to have a list of things, and it's good to have a discussion openly in internet publicly to call out certain things, and there's no harm basically calling out if there's any long issues, like long-running known issues or recognized issues. So let's talk about those things, and those things might happen. Now, the addressing, go this through one by one. Addressing long open known recognized issue. This is an ongoing challenge for us. So we're basically struggling on tracking which of the issues have been fixed and which are not fixed. it might be fixed internally, but it hasn't been marked to be fixed externally. It might be something which cracked, fell through the cracks, and it haven't been yet fixed. So we're still working on the right process on that one as well. We did pretty recently have an increase of our of the heads in our development team for SharePoint Framework, which should help on this one, as long as we don't prioritize their time again on the new stuff rather than old stuff. So, not old stuff, relevant stuff still, but it's an important finding the right balance, right?
If I may share a tip that will allow you to scale a lot,
sure.
Open source Yeoman generator. You will have the biggest dev team ever.
Sure, but maturity of these issues has nothing to do with Yeoman generator, so I do not quite understand how that would help.
Well, I don't know exactly which of the 282 issues or 163 confirmed bugs are related to Yeoman or not, but
I really, really like one or two. So So there might be some behavioral issues on the UIs when you're transitioning between the page transitions and all of that. Those are much more common issues rather than anything related on Yeoman generator.
So on a flip, would outsourcing Yeoman generator to community, would that free up internal dev resources so that they could then spend time on the things that only you guys can do?
Most likely, actually, not. That would actually require quite a significant investment from our side, because it has to be still controlled and developed and owned by Microsoft. So it wouldn't actually free up the people. It would actually tie in more people to engage with the community and making sure that everything is progressing.
Gotcha.
Forward. So it is it's one of those things. Well, open source it. Well, yeah, but open source it doesn't mean that it doesn't require planning or it doesn't require coordination or releases and all of that.
Oh, yeah.
You know this really well, Waldeck.
I know all about it. Yes.
So it's not a simple silver bullet solution on pretty much anything. Now, moving on things, but definitely we are actively trying to get this one sorted out. And we are actually, just last night, I got an email that we're getting more resources helping on the incoming issues, which should be helpful. Now, modernized SharePoint Framework project. So this is basically just making sure that the Yeoman generator side of the house, so the default structures, which we are provisioning, should be modernized, which is understandable. So the README as an example, we definitely should make sure that it's more polished and in line on what are we expecting everybody to have anyway as part of their samples, which we demand for the GitHub samples in general. As an example, that's actually one thing. I was just having a comment around that one in GitHub earlier today. There was a really nice submission of a web part related on Teams functionality and Teams integration. The downside was that the submission itself, first of all, the folder, the sample folder, wasn't named based on our naming convention. It was something like Teams sample was the folder name, and then the README has not been updated. Which, sure, the sample itself was absolutely awesome and brilliant, but how would anybody know what it actually contains unless you actually pull it down, you compile that, and you host it and everything else, and then you're like, oh, now I get it. So that's precisely the reason why we demand the README files and everything else to be up to date, so people understand the value of their samples and contributions.
Yeah, and also help us to help you
exactly.
get exposure
exactly.
for your work,
exactly.
right?
Precisely as well, yes. And that is actually one of the things in the templates is we're asking people to call out who they are and what is their Twitter account and whatever additional things. So we can actually promote these people who are contributing for the benefit of others. So super important thing. Now, move non-production dependencies, we talked the package.json dev dependencies, fair point, fair question. Clean out unnecessary entries in package.json, absolutely makes sense. Clean up logging in the browser JavaScript console, this is an ongoing kind of a challenge in general, because there's so many development teams in SharePoint. It's definitely not just our team, the developer platform team, who's using the browser console. And so there might be actually quite a lot of well, there is quite a lot of clutter in the console every now and then. But any of the controls can actually cause that, the suit navigation, small navigation, big navigation, and that's developers from India, Redmond, and China. So it's kind of a interesting balance to also clean those up as well. And also Finnish Modern. So this is definitely something which is in our pipeline. Again, it's a matter of priorities. Where do we balance our engineering to update the app catalog to the modern experiences? So not a massive task, but it has to be happening. And also the management of the installers, which has been installed to the side and all of that. So it wouldn't actually require you to go to the classic experience.
Yeah, I understand. Like, this one is especially tough, right? Because you want to offer the complete experience, but yes. On the other hand, if you choose, like, okay, from the touch point of view, which experience is used more, catalog and installing apps, or for example, the welcome page of a team site?
Yeah, exactly.
Assuming you can spend the resources only once.
Exactly. It's right, really so around prioritizing the task. And how many, and one question is that, okay, so rewriting all of this stuff is basically giving the exactly the same capabilities in modern, which, yeah, that's what we want to do. But how much more interest do we get from a developer side or end user side on installing and using SharePoint framework by rewriting this thing? And the answer is most likely, well, not that many. But it's
end users probably not.
Yeah, it's more kind of the system hygiene has to be on a certain level rather than falling back on the classic. But it's an interesting dilemma on having that discussion always that where do we invest and where do we use the resources?
And also maybe an interesting angle to that is, I don't know if you guys track that. I hope you actually do. How many folks use the UI to deploy and install packages as opposed to do it in scripts?
Yeah,
either in PowerShell or CLI. Yep. Is it worth it to invest in that, or is it just something that is there and that hurts your eye when you look at it? But to be honest, nobody looks at it because everybody has their scripts.
Yep, absolutely. Now, stop building new features from existing ones. So this one, fair feedback. It's good that we are having open discussion on these things. And yes, we are having a side discussions with AC on a lot of this stuff, but it's completely valid feedback for everybody else to see as well. SharePoint framework extensions. So finish up the existing things. Now, this is actually slightly problematic as well, because the it comes down on the organizational interests as well. So I'm from the dev platform thing. We have interests on having field customizers, but we do not own list view web parts. It's a separate team. So they own the list view web part, and they own the library web parts, and we obviously can't go and start modifying their code, and they have their own interests related on and priorities related on functionality.
But I'm sure they accept PRs.
Not for first party experiences, yes.
No,
first party
no, no, internal PRs. Internal PR.
But those might be problematic as well. It's almost the same as if you think about if it would be an open source, and if people are starting overriding too many pull requests, and then it gets really messy. You need to coordinate that work, and you need to do that stuff one step at a time. So anyway, stop building hardening SPFX, fair feedback. Please open source the generator. Yep, that's being planned. The problem really is that that's not the solution for majority of these things, which I mentioned in the blog post. It might feel that is the solution, but actually the pieces and parts which are in the generator versus which are outside of the generator in the first party experiences, I'm clearly just open sourcing the generator isn't the solution. So that's not the silver bullet on fixing all of this stuff. So. And like we discussed, that would require even more resources from us to commit on the process. So it's we'll see where we will land with this. Upload Good job.
Yes.
moving on other articles. Let's not spend too much time on as much time on this, but that's fair feedback from AC. Now, this one is from Chual. How to easily deploy a list with formatting templates built by the community. So basically, we have a really nice set of view formatting and list formatting examples, which, by the way, are now available in this really nice looking site as well, with the one step-by-step videos and guidance on how to get them into a use and how to get started. So getting started actually has a videos on explaining this is what you need to do. So great job from Chris Kent around that one. But let's get back in here. So basically pulling down the samples. Sure, that's one way of doing that. Sorry. Download and extract the template from here. So what he has done is basically a template which has a lot of the samples available, which are included in the GitHub. So, and to be honest, we are looking into using the or creating this kind of a sample in the provisioning service. So we are in progress. If we go to the provisioning service, we are in progress of planning this. So having a sample, which is something like list experiences, which actually creates the example lists and libraries and then applies column formatting and all of that on top of it using the tenant templates. Still work in progress. It's more on somebody actually making the final call that yes, we'll do that. So that's definitely coming. But until that's there, here's a template. You can actually easily use that template, which is then demonstrating quite a few examples, and these are missing for now, but it actually shows the different scenarios which are available. So pretty cool stuff.
Assuming you are on Windows.
Assuming that you're on Windows, that is correct, because it requires a PMP PowerShell usage.
Yes.
So until we'll get anyway, let's not actually
have CLI template.
How to provision and deploy PMP SharePoint Starter Kit, part one. So this one is a recap on how to use the Starter Kit, which, by the way, is a great reference sample. It has custom web parts, extensions. So Valdek has written some of those web parts as an example. And it's basically a reusable portal. And we're looking into refreshing that as well this autumn, but no timelines. Maybe by Ignite we'll make that happen. But good blog post on explaining how to get started, what do you need to install, and what does it then mean when it's up and running. Cool stuff. Now, this one is from Julie, related on SharePoint Framework application customizers, cross-site page loading. And this really is around implementing it properly when you're transitioning between the pages, so that the extension is rendering properly and is catching all the navigation updates or transitions between the pages. So, and a good sample example and notes how it actually works. So good job from Julie. This one is from John Klein. Building the foundation for Office 365 e-discovery. Not precisely a dev topic, but an interesting topic as well, because definitely as behind of the dev topics is actually the business solution, right? So trying to figure out why are we implementing some sort of development topic? Well, typically because you're implementing a business solution, and Jonah definitely is on business solution side of the house, and then explains the different processes and how to create this kind of a solution. Quite nice article explaining the different options as well. Tackling information covenants. There's multiple different options. There's no right or wrong. So anyway, this one is from Stefan Bauer. Optimize your SPFX project with the React Lazy. And what are we actually having here? It's the new, this was in a relatively new version of React, wasn't it?
Yes, correct.
I can't remember the exact version.
16 latest.
Yeah, 16 point something.
Yeah.
That's what I was
16.6. There you go. There is in text right on top.
16.6, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Good.
Anyway, the idea is that you can load on demand whatever you need as opposed to load everything up front. That is the most important part. And then you can split the code in chunks so that you load only what you actually need. And this is especially important if your application is bigger. As for example, imagine you have a form with multiple views and you don't always need all of them. If you, for example, only show the data but not edit, you don't need to load the edit experience and all of its assets.
So he's basically then comparing the different options and the impact of those things. And even 14% doesn't seem like a massive deal, but actually it is actually quite in the overall size of the page. 14% might be actually a pretty significant part.
Yeah, so, but then you can think about the 24K you save times every employee in your company, maybe the network, depending how it's cached and served. So altogether, it might add or save quite some load on the bandwidth even.
True.
Right? So there are different angles in which you can look at that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then I think, this is the last one. So this is from Ilya 3 hours ago. There it is. Let's actually use that one. Using the SPFX library components for simplifying the localization experience. And the library components is now in GA and starting from 1.9.1. So you can actually use those in production. And really the library components gives a nice way of splitting logical pieces and bits and pieces and functionalities of your solution and then loading them separately. And in this case, we kind of concentrate obviously in the localization side of the house. And again, how do we load? How do we use efficiently the same information across multiple solutions and UI elements?
Yeah.
Good. But I think that's it for now. So let me actually stop the screen sharing. Let's actually spill the beans. We did record this before. We had the chat with Kathy, so we do not know how that went. So
it was perfect. She was a fantastic guest.
Yes, exactly. I have no doubts that she was a fantastic guest, definitely. But it's actually great. One of my what I want to do more in this autumn is kind of a balance out our visitors between MVPs and then also internal people, depending on the availability and again on interest and an idea what we're going to talk about. And today we talked about definitely important things from the, let's say, inclusiveness side of the house as well. Really, really important part.
We want to have everybody on the show, period. It's so easy.
Well, that's true. That is true. We want to have everybody on the show. But it's only one show per week. So we need to balance.
Exactly. And there are many people in community. So it takes time to get everybody on the show. But that is the mission that we have, right? To get everybody on the show.
Which, by the way, if somebody is interested, you are free to reach out definitely and say, hey, what if I drop by? And we'll try to then schedule a spot whenever we are. Well, when there's free spots. But yeah,
and remember, any request you send, it has to start with Dear Vesa. It must.
I'm actually getting quite a few emails with that start nowadays, which is weird. It's turning into a meme, but
yeah,
it is what it is. Now, what are you planning to do this week, Baldek?
Derek, few things. So there are some things that, like, we released new version of CLI, so we're still going on with new commands, new PRs, improvements. We had a few issues that we have already fixed because that's inevitable. Turns out in the end, like, no matter how well you test, there are always things that just slip because you don't take into account everything as much as you like. On the work front,
that's kind of a classic discussion with people who've been on R&D and those who haven't, because I don't know if people actually know this, but in real world, when R&D is shipping solutions, it's a balancing act on making a decision. And yeah, we know that there's 2,000 bugs, known bugs, but we're going to ship it anyway, because you have to at some point ship the solutions as well. And it's inevitable that there's bugs related on, because there's just no way for testing all of the scenarios and environments and different options.
And I mean, even if you test, then you will find out all the bugs and you don't have the bandwidth to address them. And you can go around it two ways. You can say, like, you know what, we're going to close the shop for a year. In a year, you will have a perfect thing. Or you know what, maybe we will ship what we have. Sure, it will not be perfect, but maybe for 9 out of 10 things, it will work just fine.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. And that is the balance. And I guess that when you work on projects, that is so different than working on products. Yeah. Right. Because there is the start, there is the end, you ship things, you're done. And sure, there is SLA and support, but it's different. In products, like at least where I sit, there's always more work than hours in a day. You have an endless to-do of things. And then at the same time, you have feedback, you have improvement, you have bug. And at the same time, there are new things. There is changes in the reality, the market, changes on your dependencies. And you end up managing 20 million things and try to balance them out. Like, okay, do I spend this or do I spend that?
Yes.
Exactly.
And then, so, then if you delay the shipping 2 months, then you miss the market opportunity because the market is catching on. And then, it's a really interesting balance.
Yeah.
But you don't, unless you actually work in R&D or in a product real product management side of the house, it is something which people don't necessarily think about how things are done.
That reminds me, maybe that would be a nice topic for episode, because I think majority of our audience are consultants. So maybe it would be interesting to share your point of view and mine from our perspective, companies, different sizes and orgs. Like, how do we approach product management versus the experience that we care from the past around projects and gigs?
Yeah. True.
Basically, to give people like more insight behind the scene, like what does it take to be PM? Like, what are different things you have to take into account, and why you just don't do it?
That's actually that's a great suggestion. We're going to actually use that probably next Monday because what I'm going to do this week is that I'm going to actually go to a long weekend off, and drive to the Lapland later on under the week. But then on Monday evening, we can need to record the Chip on Dev Weekly anyway. So that would be a good discussion point.
There you go.
No, awesome. The next week's session is now booked.
Planned, yes.
cool. But anything else what you're doing this week? Sorry for jumping.
Yeah, so then on the work front, we're investigating kind of different idea related to management of 365 and maybe SaaS at large. We have some ideas like how we could improve it, what people could do. So we're going to spend some time thinking about that, investigating that, and we hope that really soon we might or might not have something to share and show.
Sounds good. Sounds interesting.
I hope so.
Yeah. That's really good. Before I leave, I need to figure out the monthly summary. We have a monthly community call coming up later today. If you see this video tomorrow, Tuesday, then we have...
It was already passed.
Exactly. So, but yeah, and then there's a massive amount of endless list of to-do list of things. Now I actually realize that even some of the stuff is actually now visible on there.
Yes, but it is encoded in Finnish, so encrypted in Finnish.
No, it isn't. No, I don't write stuff in Finnish. So I don't. I'm pretty much losing my Finnish in writing skills, which is horrible. So.
Well, actually, I don't write anything in pen anymore, so I lose my skills to write with pen at all.
Yeah, that's altogether. True. Yeah. That's true as well. Yeah, that's true. But yeah, all good. But I think that's it for this one. So thank you, Kathy, one more time for joining us. Thank you again for the community contributors. Go to those SharePoint Saturdays. It was Barcelona and Stockholm this weekend. Have fun. Sorry that we couldn't actually drop by, but we'll be there potentially next time. Who knows? But we'll come up with a new episode within a week. Thanks. Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks, everybody.